had long been demolished after being inundated time and again by the Scioto River, which had overflowed much of Columbus in the greenhouse floods. Now the headquarters grounds were surrounded by a low earthen levee, almost like the long mysterious mounds that the original Native Americans had built in the region 1,000 years earlier. Gillian Hatcher was bubbling with excitement. She bent over the desk of the observatory's director, a small, slim, blonde woman, filled with the energy and exhilaration of discovery. "It's real!" she shouted, tapping the computer screen on her boss's desk. "I found it! I found it!" She practically danced around the small, cluttered office. Dwight Franklin smiled at her. Although he contained his excitement as best he could, he too felt a thrill shuddering along his spine. "After all these years," he murmured. Franklin had a square, chunky build. His thinning hair was combed straight back from his high forehead. Sitting behind his desk in his shirt sleeves and suspenders, he looked more like a clerk or an accountant than a world-renowned astronomer. "The pulses are regular," Gillian said, dancing back to his desk. "It's a message from an extraterrestrial civilization."
"Looks intriguing, I've got to admit," said Franklin.
"Where in the sky?"
"The region of Sagittarius," she crowed. "The heart of the Milky Way."
"And it's fixed in its position? It's not a satellite or a spacecraft?" Gillian's beaming face faded a little.
"I haven't tracked it yet."
Franklin got up from his creaking desk chair.
"Well, let's see if we can get a firm fix on it."
She sank into silence and followed him out into the chill November night. Clouds were building up along the western horizon, but most of the sky was clear as crystal. Orion and the Bull sparkled above them. Gillian picked out the Pleiades cluster and bright Aldebaran. The observatory was freezing cold with the dome open, but they walked past the silent framework of the Schmidt telescope and into the tiny control room. It was heated, and Gillian was grateful for that. Half an hour later, her excitement had evaporated like a shallow pan of water over a hot fire. Franklin looked up from the computer screen, a fatherly look of sympathy on his face.
"It's a spacecraft, I'm afraid."
"Are you sure?" Gillian asked, desperate. "Positive?"
He gestured toward the display.
"See for yourself. It's out in the asteroid belt, and it's definitely moving."
"It's not a star."
"I'm afraid not."
"Not a message from an extraterrestrial intelligence?"
"No."
Gillian felt like crying, but then a new thought popped into her head. "So, why is a spacecraft out in the belt sending pulsed laser messages toward Earth? What's he trying to say?"
Ore-Ship Syracuse, the workshop. The workshop smelled of machine oil and dust. The overhead lamps bathed the big chamber in glareless, shadowless light. Theo sat at a long workbench in one corner where shelves of chemical compounds were stacked high on both sides of him. He was bent over an ordinary optical microscope, feeling frustrated and cranky, when a sister came through the open hatch that led back to the family's living quarters. He didn't hear her enter, nor the soft footfalls of her slippered feet as she approached his workbench. He was studying the jiggling Brownian motion of the metallic chips that he had mixed into a sample of liquid plastic. Although the instructions in the maintenance videos had been quite specific, Theo found that the supplies his father had stored were far short of what he needed to repair the ship's antennas. He was trying to make do with what was available in the storage bays, and it wasn't going well. "Thee?" Angie called timidly. Her voice startled him. He jerked up straight on the stool he was sitting on. "I didn't mean to scare you," Angie said. "I'm not scared," he snapped. "You just surprised me, that's all." "You didn't come in for lunch," his sister said, "and now it's almost dinner time." "Okay, okay, tell Mom I'll be there." But he turned back to the microscope. "How's it going?" Angie asked. "Lousy." "Really?" He looked up at her, Really, lousy. I don't have the electrolyte I need, and the polymer filler is so old and goddamn gooey I don't think it'll be workable. Theo, I really... Go tell Mom about the language. It's not that. Angie took a breath, then went on. Is it really going to take 8 years for us to get back to Ceres? He heard the stress in her voice. Unless I can figure out a way to shorten it. 8 years? She whimpered. Trying to fight down the anger rising inside him, Theo said, Yes, 8 years, 7 months, and 4 days. You don't have to be so happy about it. I'm not happy, Angie. You're gloating. You don't care how long it takes. You don't care about me at all. I told you I'm trying to figure out a way to shorten it, Theo protested. What more can I do for Christopher Columbus's sake? She plopped herself down on the bench beside him. 8 years. I'll be an old woman by the time we get back. If we get back, he said. He knew he shouldn't have said it, but there it was. If? There's a good chance we'll die on this bucket. The recyclers might wear out. The fusion reactor could fail. Our hydrogen fuel is going to run out. Angie clapped her hands to her ears. I don't want to hear it. You're just being spiteful. It's the truth, Angie. No, she said. We'll live. We're not going to die here. If something breaks down, we'll fix it. If we can. And you'll find a way to get us back to Ceres quicker, too, won't you? You're just teasing me, trying to make me cry. Angie, I'm just telling you the facts. I can't sit here for 8 years, Theo. I'll be 26 years old by then. 26! All the guys my age will already be married. Suddenly, Theo understood what was really bothering her. Angie, he asked, that bozo you dated when we were docked at Chrysalis last year, he's not a bozo. His name is Leif Haldeman. How serious are you about him? She blinked several times before murmuring, I love him, Theo. Have you been to bed with him? Her cheeks flamed. That's none of your business. Does Mom know, or Dad? There's nothing for them to know. I love Leif, and he loves me. We were going to tell Mom and Dad about it when we got back to Ceres. He was living on Chrysalis. He was looking for a job with one of the rock rats. He's a mining engineer. Feeling totally miserable, Theo said softly, Angie, if he was still on Chrysalis when we were approaching Ceres... Angie's eyes went wide as she realized what her brother was trying to tell her. You think he was killed? I don't think anybody aboard Chrysalis survived, Angie. No, she said, shaking her head. He probably found a berth on one of the mining ships. He was probably out in the belt somewhere when Chrysalis was attacked. I hope so, said Theo. He had to be. I hope so, he repeated.
Victor was roused from a troubled sleep by a beeping noise. Any sound at all aboard the cramped little pod was alarming. The muted hum of the air fans and the constant buzz of the electronics had long since faded into an unnoticed background, but a new sound, a ping, a beep, a creak, meant danger. Instantly awake, Victor swiftly scanned the control board. No red lights, all systems functioning nominally. The beeping sounded again, and Victor saw a yellow light flashing in a corner of the control panel. The comm laser, he realized. What's wrong? His breath caught in his throat. That's the message light! Wiping sleep from his eyes with the heel of one hand, he punched up the communication system on his main screen. Torchship Elsinore. The yellow letters blazed on the otherwise dark screen. His mind raced. Elsinore was one of the vessels in orbit around Ceres when the attack started. Victor pounded on the comm key. Elsinore, this is Syracuse. What's left of it anyway? A woman's voice replied. We have you in sight. We'll rendezvous with you in 20 minutes. Be prepared to come aboard. Victor wanted to kiss her, whoever she was, but then he remembered. I don't have a suit. I can't go EVA. Several heartbeats silence. Then a man's voice answered, Very well, we'll send a shuttlecraft and mate to your airlock. Thank you, Victor said fervently. He had never felt so grateful in his life. Thank you. Thank you.
After dinner, Theo was so tired that all he wanted was to crawl into his bunk and sleep.